tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 11th of March 2026 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, if you are a British listener, then you cannot have missed all the flags, the patriotic flags that are being raised all over the country. Whenever you drive around, you will see these flags. When I'm driving in England, I see the Cross of St George, the England flag everywhere, the Union Jack flag. When I'm in Wales, I'm used to seeing the Welsh flag all the time anyway, because people in Wales are very patriotic, and a lot of people tend to have a Welsh flag hoisted up a flagpole in their garden. I mean, I even see barbershops, which are owned by non-whites, and even they have the Welsh flag up, and people that do the car washes, they have the Welsh flag up in Wales. And we also see them on roundabouts, hanging off bridges. It's very encouraging to see. I mean, it shows that there is an upswell of patriotic sentiment. And the fact that it's not just the Union Jack, which is the British flag, but the English flag and the Welsh flag that is being hoisted, it shows that this is based on ethnicity more so than country. Now, I've heard some Welsh criticism of the Welsh flag. Oh, well, the Welsh flag, it was gifted to us by England. But in actual fact, the Welsh flag is unique in that it does explicitly represent the Welsh people, not the country. And that's because the image on it is the red dragon. And what this goes back to is at the time when Vortigern was coming over to Britain, the Saxon, or Vortigern was the English king that made a deal with the Saxons to give them Kent. When he was building a castle, they were having difficulty building this castle, and they dug under the ground, and once they dug down, there was a red dragon and a white dragon fighting, effectively, and this was causing earthquakes. And the white dragon chased the red dragon off, and Merlin interpreted this, and he said that the white dragon represented the Anglo-Saxon people, and the red dragon represented the Welsh people, not the Welsh country, not Wales, the country, but the red dragon represented the Welsh people, the ethnic group. Therefore, the Welsh flag is explicitly for the Welsh people. That's who it represents. That's why I would say it's such a good flag to raise, is because it is explicitly ethnic based rather than country based. Whereas the flag of St George or the flag of St Andrew, I mean, I'm not certain on this, but it may be more related to the country themselves. Although people use them for ethnicity, I'm not sure that St George is explicitly for the English ethnicity. And I do know that the Welsh flag is. But just the fact that people are raising these flags, it shows that something is stirring within the British people. A shared ancestral heritage is stirring, and people are wishing to express their heritage, and this is why they are putting the flags up. Now, Mark Collette did a good speech last year, I think it was at the PA conference, where he said that this is similar to what happened in Northern Ireland. And in Northern Ireland, you had these flags that were going up, the flag of the Union or the flag of the Irish. And it was that you had sectarian communities, basically. You had separated communities by their ethnicity, whether they were English or Northern Irish or whether they were Southern Irish. And it's the same thing that we have happening here. We have people identifying with their ethnic group and raising these flags. Now, obviously, there was war, essentially, between the Northern Irish and the Southern Irish. And that's not what we have going on here. Well, you certainly don't have a war going on between the Scots, the English and the Welsh. What we have is an upswell in this ancestral sentiment. And widely across the country, people are realizing that they need to start identifying with their ethnicity. And one of the first ways that you start doing that is by raising your flag. Now, of course, the government are not happy about this. And the article that I have for us today comes from the Daily Mail. And the headline is, "Flying a Union Jack flag is branded a tool of hate in a government's leaked social cohesion strategy." And I would say straight off, it's got nothing to do with hate. It's to do with love. It's to do with love for your own people, wanting to identify with your own people, wanting to be proud of your own people. Now, in the modern world, being proud of your own people means you are excluding every other people, and therefore it must be hate. Whereas that's not the way that the world works. I often think that if every people group was doing exclusively what was best for that people group, then we would have a much better world in general, because everywhere things would be improving for each people group that would be responsible for their own people group. Everything would generally get better year after year. That doesn't happen, of course, because we have multiculturalism and we're told that we have to do things for the benefit of everybody, for every people group. And if we try to do things exclusively for our own people group, then that's considered to be hate. But of course, that just means that no people group actually gets served. And surely it's going to be much better if each people group does what's best for each people group. And of course, that's ethno-nationalism in a nutshell. And also this headline here where they say a Union Jack flag, I think the Union Jack is only when the flag is raised on a naval ship. That's when it's called a Union Jack. Like the Jack itself is the name of the flag. The actual flag itself is just referred to as a Union flag. It is a Union flag. It is the flag of the United Kingdom. Starting with this article here, "Flying English, Scottish and Union Jack flags has been branded tools of hate in a leaked draft of the government's new social cohesion strategy." And that's really quite clear, isn't it? It's saying that the English people, the Scots and the Welsh, they are haters, because if they start raising their flag, it means that they hate everybody else. As I say, it's the opposite of the truth. It just means that you love your own people group. You're proud of your own people group. Just because you love your own family does not mean that you hate every other family in the street. It just means that you understand that your family is your family, and it's important that you do what is best for your family, and you belong to that family. That's what it means. It doesn't mean that you hate all the other families. And that's a good way to look at it, I think, is ethno-nationalism. If you look at the nation as an extended family, then it becomes very hard for our opponents to say, oh, you just hate everybody else, because people don't hate everyone else's family, and everybody instinctively thinks that their own family is best. And it's just the same thing with race and nation. "A leaked draft of the proposals suggests national symbols were sometimes used last summer to exclude or intimidate." And again, this is weasel words, because if you have an ethnicity, then by definition, it excludes members of other ethnicities because they're not part of that ethnicity. It's like if you're a cat, that excludes dogs from joining the cats, because dogs are a different species to cats. They're a different animal species. If you're raising an English flag and you're saying, I am of English ethnicity, well, of course it means that other groups are going to be excluded from that. But they're not excluded from raising their own flags. Pakistanis aren't excluded from raising their own Pakistani flag, and that would be excluding the English from it, wouldn't it? So raising these flags aren't there to exclude others, because others have their own flag that they can raise. They don't have to, there's not just one flag that everybody can use and we're keeping everybody out from it. All these different people groups have their own flag. So this is wrong to say that it's used in order to exclude or to intimidate. How can the English flag be used to intimidate anybody on English soil? It's English soil. The very fact that it is England and it's the English people should serve to prevent others from causing problems, to be honest. To intimidate them in a good way, I would suggest, if there's any intimidation that's intended at all. I don't think intimidation is what's intended, as I say, because other groups can raise their own flags. I think what is intended by showing it is a love for your own people. It warned that the extreme right has tried to turn symbols of pride into tools of hate. Now, I guess the journalists would probably refer to me as extreme right. They did an assessment of me in prison and they said, although I am not an extremist, my views are fairly extreme and some people might be offended by them. And I guess the mainstream media might refer to me as the extreme right. Am I turning symbols of pride into tools of hate? I don't think so. I'm pointing out that when these flags are raised, it is a sign of love for one's own people. And it's not about excluding others, because others have their own flags that they can raise. They have their own ethnic groups' colours that they can raise. They don't need to come and join our colours. There isn't just one flag for everybody and we're excluding everybody from that. It's just that there's one flag for each ethnic group. So I don't see that that is turning a symbol of pride into a tool of hate. In actual fact, it's turning it into a unifying symbol, because it's saying every people group has its own flag. That's why we're raising this flag. It's not that they're raising something that is exclusive. Only white people raise flags. Everybody raises flags. The 47-page document also reportedly warns that anti-Semitism has become normalized in many corners of society, from schools and universities to workplaces and the NHS. And of course, what they really mean by that is anti-Zionism, or anti-Israel wars, or anti-Israeli genocide in Palestine. It's not that people in schools and in the NHS and at universities are talking about Jews promoting diversity or Jews encouraging refugees into the country or Jews promoting feminism or LGBTQ. That's not what's being discussed in schools and universities. What's being discussed is Israeli attacks on Palestinians, Israeli attacks on Iran, the fact that our governments seem willing to do whatever Israel tells them to do, which effectively says that our governments have been co-opted by Zionist influences. And in actual fact, we do find that all our prominent politicians are vying for the position of being the biggest Zionist that there is. They all are very, very keen to show you their Zionist credentials and tell you how much they love Israel, with Donald Trump at the head of this. It couldn't be any more clearer to people that Israel or Jews or Zionists have an inordinate amount of influence on governments and on the media. Is that anti-Semitism to be talking about that? Well, the government probably think that it is. And if you go by the internationally accepted Holocaust definition of anti-Semitism, it is any criticism of Israel is anti-Semitism. And in fact, actual fact, they say anything that could that any perception that Jews think is anti-Semitism is anti-Semitism. And of course, Jews are going to say that any criticism of anything Jewish is anti-Semitism. So that's what they mean here. They mean criticism of Israel, criticism of Israeli policy, or criticism of government policy for doing what Israel wants. That's the anti-Semitism that they're talking about here. And of course, that's a big distance away from the anti-Semitism of the National Socialists, of course. It's left-wing anti-Semitism, I guess, is what you could call it, which is effectively just anti-Zionism. I would say it's not Semitism because it's not actually based on the ethnic group. It's based on a political ideology. Zionism is a political ideology. It's not an ethnic group. People can be Zionist from any ethnic group whatsoever, which is essentially what causes the problems, is that we have European politicians that put their Zionist politics ahead of their own nation's politics and needs. Some £800 million over 10 years would be put towards 40 areas where social cohesion is deemed to be under pressure under the proposal. So what are they saying here? I guess they're saying that areas where people put flags up, social cohesion is under pressure. So it's under pressure for you to put up the flag of your nation. It means that you're putting pressure on these other groups and that they aren't a part of the group. Well, it's just a fact that they aren't a part of somebody else's ethnic group. This is what is so ridiculous about all of this. And thankfully, we had people like Suella Braverman, who is quite sensible on this issue. And she says, I'm not English. I'm a British citizen, but I'm of Indian ethnicity. You can't say that I'm of English ethnicity. And that's a fact. And then you get people like David Lammy saying, well, why can't I be English? Well, you can't be English, David Lammy, because English is not your ethnicity. It's rather like a dog saying, why can't I be a cat? It's just not factually possible for you to be English because your ancestry is of Caribbean heritage. Your ethnicity is Caribbean or Black African. It's not English and it can't ever be English. And that's not breaking down social cohesion, is it? Because people are already broken down into their ethnic groups because of their different ancestry, because of their different parentage. That's what creates these groups. If we didn't have these groups, we would have nothing at all. If we were just a collection of individuals, we wouldn't even have a civilization. Civilization comes from a group getting together and doing and building and making the situation better for their descendants. And it's like a father that works to provide for his children. The father and the mother do everything that they can to provide for the children. When you have a nation, the adults get together and they work to improve the situation for their children. That's nation building. That's how all the countries in Europe were built, how our civilization was built. It was all built around ethnicity. And now they try to say that identifying with your ethnicity puts pressure on social cohesion. Well, there is no social cohesion, is there, between one ethnic group and another? You're either part of one group or you're part of another. You can't say all these groups are together, because if you try to then do something that benefits each one of these groups, it's not going to benefit them, because what will benefit one group may not benefit another. Going into Palestine will benefit the Israelis, but it won't benefit the Palestinians. You can't say that you can come up with a policy that's actually going to help both groups by sending Israel into Palestine, can you? I mean, that's just one example. But it's the same with ethnic groups in multicultural countries. Doing one thing for one ethnic group, it means that you're doing the opposite for another ethnic group. And that's why it's so ridiculous to have multicultural countries. It's rather like saying, with clothing, one size fits all. Well, of course, it's not going to fit all. It just means that it's going to fit nobody. You need to be making tailor-made clothes for each individual person. Then that fits. You need to be making tailor-made policies for each individual ethnic group. Then the world would progress in a positive direction. The draft was leaked to the Spectator magazine, which reported that ministers will unveil the finished plans titled Protecting What Matters in a cross-government drive next week. Well, protecting what really matters is protecting your family, isn't it? That's what really matters. Not protecting some abstract ideology like democracy, for instance, but protecting your family. That's what really matters to people. is their family. That's the central point. That's who it is that gave birth to them, and that's who it is that their children will be a part of. That's what matters. Yet, according to the government, what matters is multiculturalism. It's this hodgepodge of different ethnic groups and pretending that that's a positive thing, when in actual fact it's just a negative thing for everyone. It's putting across this false idea that there is unity in diversity, which, again, it's just nonsensical to claim that there is unity in diversity. How can being divided be anything positive? Government sources said the draft was a version which was never going to be published, and the words will not be used when the report is issued on Monday. Well, we'll have to have a look at the report. But it doesn't seem unlikely that this is what they were likely to put. I mean, they might change the wording slightly, but the motive is still going to be there. They're not going to change their motives, are they? It's just that they've been caught out saying that raising the Union flag is a tool of hate. Last summer, patriotic campaigners vowed to continue putting up England and Union Jack flags despite council workers ripping them down. I think some people were even prosecuted. Imagine that, being prosecuted for raising your own flag, your own ethnicity's flag in your own ethnic homeland, raising the flag of the country and being told that you are a purveyor of hate for doing so. A drive to cover British towns and cities in national flags was being coordinated by an online movement called Operation Raise the Colours. And I'm very glad that they did this. I mean, there have been allegations that they've been profiting out of this. But the fact of the matter is, they have encouraged all of these flags to go up, which has encouraged more patriotism, more ethnic solidarity amongst the British people, which is a wonderful thing. As I say, in Wales, people have always had the Welsh flag and they always fly the Welsh flag. And Rupert Lowe even commented on it the other day. He sent a tweet out saying how patriotic the Welsh were and how he wished in England it was the same. And that in Wales, you just see the Welsh flag everywhere and everybody is proud of their flag. That it is different in England. But I think that is changing. I think views about these flags, as I say, there's been a great revival in identifying with your ethnic group amongst the British peoples. Patriotic activists are using a Facebook page to help gather flags together, with members chipping in with offers of transport and equipment, such as ladders. And again, it's encouraged the community to come together. It's got people working together with others, people that they may not actually know in their individual lives, but now they do know them because they've been working together to put these flags up. So surely that is community cohesion. That is helping the community to come together to do these things. Yet, according to the government, it's doing the opposite of that. It's breaking up social cohesion. See, what they're saying is cohesion amongst the British peoples, that's not a good thing. That breaks up the cohesion amongst all the groups together. And I say, well, there is no cohesion amongst all these groups together. And also what they're saying is if you are identifying with your own people group and helping your own community, somehow that is seen as a negative thing by our government. I mean, could it really be any clearer that our government are not there for our interests? And in actual fact, the government appear to be there against our interests with a lot of the policies that they carry out. Multiculturalism, just for one. At the time, the Prime Minister backed the public's right to fly St George's flags, but the leaked government documents appear to link it to rising tensions over immigration and protests by the far right. Well, what has caused these rising tensions over immigration? Is it the fact that people are raising Welsh flags and English flags? Or is it the government's immigration policy that has caused the rising tension? Of course, it's the government's policy that's caused the rising tension, not the flags. It says here, not protests by the far right. Protests haven't caused the tension. The tension has been caused by the government's immigration policy. The government's immigration policy has resulted in rapes, murders, sexual assaults, all over the country, wherever the refugees, the alleged refugees, have been put. That's what has caused the raised tensions, and that is what has caused the protests by the so-called far right. According to the government, it isn't. That isn't what's caused it. It's the raising of the flags. It's like when they'll say that protests have been caused by a politician referring to immigration negatively. No, that's a politician reflecting the views of the public. Whether that politician had reflected those views or not, people are still going to protest against these things. It's like the government will say, if you point something out, you're the one responsible for people getting upset about it. Well, no, people can see for themselves. It doesn't need to be pointed out. People can see for themselves. They learn for themselves that their children are being harassed on the way home from school by refugees. It's not because Sven Longshanks talks about these issues on his podcast. It's because they see it for themselves, right in front of them. That's what is causing the breakdown in social cohesion, is the government's immigration policies. That's what's causing these rising tensions. Reform UK's deputy leader, Richard Tice, told The Sun, "Absurdly, this says our national flag is a tool of hate used to intimidate. The whole paper is a divisive nonsense that should be consigned to the bin." Well, as I say, the whole policy is to divide the nation. That's what diversity is. Diversity is division. The proposals also suggest a special representative role will be introduced to champion efforts across the UK to tackle hostility and hatred directed at Muslims and those perceived to be Muslim. So we're going to have a champion that looks at people that criticise Islam, I should imagine. And surely we should be free to criticise a religion, or we should be free to criticise the actions of followers of a religion. Well, not today we aren't, because that's considered hate speech. A new definition of Islamophobia is also expected to be set out as part of guidance on anti-Muslim hatred. Now, I think we have an anti-Semitism czar in Britain. His name is John Mann. So effectively, I think what they're saying here is they're going to do the same thing, but for Muslims. I mean, it's just embarrassing seeing John Mann's philo-Semitism. And I should imagine it would be quite embarrassing as well, seeing a European, a goy, being put forward to show how much he loves Muslims. And this new definition of Islamophobia, we've talked about this a few times here at Patriotic Alternative. And as it says here, critics have argued the move could act as a backdoor blasphemy law and limit free speech, though the government has said its focus is on protecting people from unacceptable treatment. Well, that's the excuse that's used for all of this. All of these restrictions on speech are used because they're supposed to be there to protect people from unacceptable treatment, but in actual fact, they just get used to silence, prosecute, bully the people that criticise government policies that are related to these things. I mean, people get quite hot under the collar when they hear about somebody being raped and murdered by a refugee, and there is a temptation to use a racial slur when talking about the rapist murderer. And that isn't really because they're wanting to incite hatred against the refugee community. It's because they're angry and upset about a horrific action that's taken place because of that community being in the country. The source of this is the government. And it's just that people get so upset about these things that are happening that they get tempted to use negative language. And that's when the state will pounce on them and stick them in prison for doing so, and say, well, you've been put in prison because we're trying to protect people from unacceptable treatment. And of course, your argument is, well, is it acceptable then for refugees to go out and rape and murder people? Is that what you're saying? That's acceptable, but me complaining about it is unacceptable, and I have to be sent to prison because I'm harming social cohesion by complaining about it. And that's what's being said here. A Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government spokesman said, "We do not comment on leaks." Shadow Community Secretary Sir James Cleverly. That's interesting. I thought he'd joined Reform, or I thought at least he would have joined Reform by now. They do seem to be the new Tories. Farage's front bench looks exactly like the last Tory government. Shadow Community Secretary Sir James Cleverly said the proposal for an anti-Muslim hostility czar risked having a chilling effect. And of course, this chilling effect is what all of these restrictions on speech are about. That's what it is intended to do. It is intended to frighten people into not criticising the government on the policies that have the most effect on the British people. If you want to criticise the government about how they're not taxing a certain group enough, well, that's absolutely fine. But of course, whether somebody is paying more or less tax doesn't directly affect you. But if you want to complain about your daughters being raped and murdered, which clearly it does have an effect on you, then they want to have a chilling effect on that. And they want people to measure their language. I mean, you could say, well, it's good to measure your language anyway. You don't want to inflame tensions. You don't want somebody to hear about this rape and murder and then go out and physically attack a refugee. And that's quite correct. We should be careful about these things. But people do point these things out and they still end up getting sent to jail. I mean, look at Sam Melia. The content that he was putting out was completely legal, completely factual, but simply because he had a racial slur and a couple of jokes on his private messages, it was decided that he must have been intending to incite hate with his legal and truthful messages. So it is definitely intended to have a chilling effect on people when they complain about these policies that have the most effect on them. And it's interesting how the government will never actually question itself on whether multiculturalism is a good thing or not. I mean, it's just accepted, oh, that is a good thing. And if anybody complains about it, we have to shut them down straight away. It sort of implies that if they did let people complain about it, something would be done about it. And the people would rise up and democratically replace the people that are actually there in place at the moment. That's why they want to silence this. Of course, they think if we can brush it all under the carpet, nobody will notice. But of course, the more it happens, the more likely it is to happen to somebody that you know. So it's not that people are talking about it. They're not the people that are to blame for this disturbance in the social cohesion. It's the fact that the government's own policies have caused these horrific things to happen. That's what's affecting the social cohesion. Sir James Cleverly accused Labour of pandering to sectarianism after losing the previously rock-solid seat of Gorton and Denton in Greater Manchester to the Greens in a parliamentary by-election last month. Well, I wouldn't say Labour lost that for pandering to sectarianism. I would say Labour lost that for their unwavering support for Israel in an overwhelmingly Muslim area. The Muslims are not going to vote for the party that supports Israel, are they? They're going to vote for the party that doesn't. So it's not pandering to sectarianism, Labour doing that, that caused this. It's sectarianism in itself that caused Labour to be pushed out. It's the opposite. But of course, he wouldn't say that because, of course, he is a Zionist himself. A Tory frontbencher said the Conservatives stand against such divisive tactics. Really? Well, the Conservatives weren't voted in either because the Conservatives are also staunch Zionists that support Israel's attacks on Gaza and Iran. He continued, as Kemi Badenoch said this week, identity politics is a dead end and our country is headed down a dark road if it falls on sectional interests rather than shared values and freedoms. Again, I guess Black Lives Matter and left-wing ideals, they refer to that as identity politics. But identity is central to everything. And what is central to your identity is your ethnicity. And we should be able to have representation for our ethnicity, but we're not allowed to have representation for our ethnicity because we're considered to be racist if we ask for that. But that is central to everything. And again, that's central to identity. But they were, instead of referring to that as identity politics, they refer to Black Lives Matter and left-wing things and what the Labour Party do as identity politics, whereas real identity politics has got to be based upon ethnicity, because that is central to everybody's identity. Everybody's sense of who they are comes from the ethnic group which they belong to. He continued, anti-Muslim hatred is real, but we should tackle it with the existing laws we have for that exact purpose, without undermining free expression. Of course, they would say that I hate Muslims. I don't hate Muslims at all. But they would say that my language in the podcast that I was prosecuted for was Islamophobic, because I was critical of grooming gangs, which are predominantly made up of Muslim peoples. And they would say that that was hate speech and I must be locked up. And that's what they mean as hatred. It means just literal criticism or using slang terms to refer to the people that you're talking about. That is hatred, according to the state. So the general public hear this and they hear anti-Muslim hatred is wrong. And of course, they would agree with that. They'll say, well, you don't want to be encouraging people to hate others. But what they don't realise is, but what that actually means is criticism of Muslims for carrying out horrific crimes like rape and murder, that would be considered anti-Muslim hate, or it can be considered anti-Muslim hate, depending on what your private messages say. So you're not even going to be judged on what you publicly say, but you'll be judged on what jokes you make in your private messages. As I was saying, that's what convicted Sam Melia. We will have Sam Melia on for an interview. I'm recording that interview on Friday this week, so we will have that for next week. But for now, I shall say thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.